Hello,
Love
hello,
Talk
everyone.
Radio.
Everyone, it's The Real with Sage Single Moms, and I'm Patricia Taylor. I'm your host tonight, and our show, we're going to be talking about when our children have special needs, and we have two fabulous ladies on the line who's our guest, and the first one is Contessa Louise Cooper, who is an author, speaker, advocate, and she had just had a book, Mad at the World, How to Move On and Find Peace When You're a Special Needs Parent, and it made the top of Amazon bestseller, and she's currently writing a book on a handbook to modern dating and sex for individuals with high-functioning autism and a parent's guide to assist with discussion-sensitive topics. And our next guest is Teresa Wright Johnson, who is a true entrepreneur, mom, an entrepreneur, and mom. Teresa is the CEO of TWJME Enterprise and Mommy Care Parent Support Services. They call her the Queen of Balance, and she helps her clients learn how to effectively navigate their business and personal life together as one. Also, she coaches and mentors moms and women, and she's a certified parenting specialist that help people with throughout their careers. And also, she has a degree in business, certification in mental health, early childhood, domestic violence, and parent education. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you
for having me on the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here. Love the music.
I like the music, too. It is really nice. All thanks to Mrs. Pink. Okay, ladies. We're going to talk about kids with special needs, and I have some questions, of course, lined up for y'all. First thing is, I know both of y'all are parents with children with special needs. Did you know that ahead of time or after the pregnancy?
I'll go first. I did not know until after the pregnancy. My son was actually born 6 weeks early, was in intensive care nursery for 30 days, and it was actually probably about a week before I even saw him. And then we came home as a preemie, took care of him, but I just noticed that he wasn't doing all the things that the book said he should be doing, and that's when I went to go and talk to a pediatrician to see what was going on with him. So I had no idea until after I went and had that conversation with his pediatrician.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I kind of had the same experience in some ways. I had two children that were both premature babies, and because of the prematurity, they both had different challenges. However, my namesake for my organization for children with special needs and parents supporting them, Zaria Song, is my daughter Zaria. And Zaria definitely was born similar, was in the baby NICU for quite some time, for a few months. But I knew that very early on that she was going to probably experienced some needs because she was born an emergency C-section, as my other child was. And I have two different sets of disabilities. One, and we'll talk about more cognitive, physical, and that kind of thing, and then behavioral. So, yeah, definitely you don't know right off because no parent is expecting their child to have a disability. So I don't think you know, but you do know when something's different, like she said.
Yes. And that's challenging with itself, just being a mom, you know, just raising children, period. but when they have special needs or need extra care, different things going on, that could be very challenging. So what was one of the most challenging things you had to deal with having a child with special needs?
One of the things I think I had to deal with, and it took me a while, I wrote about that in my book, is other people's reaction to my child. So my son, he's 27 now, and he has autism. And back then, people didn't know what autism was, so they were afraid to catch it. They were afraid their kids were going to catch it. They didn't understand his behaviors. They didn't understand why he ate a certain way. They didn't understand why he sat upside down. None of these things. And so they would back off. They didn't invite us over. They didn't want us, you know, they didn't come over my house. And so I felt alienated when I first found out that he had autism. And so I had to learn how to forgive all of those people who unintentionally hurt me and my children.
Wow, I really like that, because I can really relate to that. In regards, the hardest thing for me is having two different types of children, two different children with two different needs. My daughter Zaria, unfortunately, is no longer with us here on Earth because of one of her disabilities. She had a seizure, and that was final. But her being more physically disabled and cognitively, people could see it. So they were aware, and I did get questions. But for me, I kind of started right at the hospital on my feet, like learning about her disability of cerebral palsy, seizures, and mitochondrial syndrome. On the other hand, that was more visual. My next child was born. She was a preemie. She's a 12-year-old now. She has straight A's and B's. However, her challenges are more emotional, mental health, EBD, or emotional behavioral health. So I talk to parents all the time as a certified parent specialist and an advocate about, you know, sometimes you can't see certain things. And a lot of people are like, oh, that child over there doesn't have ADHD. They're just bad. So it's really, really strange, like the contrast, and very difficult to explain to people some of the invisible disabilities. So that was my hardest challenge. Also, I just want to say this too. I make sure to tell people my child experiences like cerebral palsy or experiences ADHD or whatever, because I think people start trying to label your child as that's all they are sometimes. So that definitely is one of the things. I always let them know that's just a part of who they are.
I like that. I like what you said, Teresa, about labels, because I think labels, you know, that goes with a lot of things, and not just with disability and special needs, but people put labels on people and really not understanding all it is. And when they start to label you, I think that's where the problems start to lie, when people want to put labels on people. I don't understand why we just can't all just be human beings, but definitely a lot of labels goes on people, and it's very difficult.
I actually have a different view on that because I deal with a lot of high-functioning individuals that have autism.
Uh-huh.
They actually don't mind that label and actually kind of take control of that identity and actually enjoy being autistic.
Right, I can see that too. I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a different side, especially if they embrace it. And that's why I say that's something they experience. It's just like one day she might be happy, one day she might be sad. However, that the autism part is, that's part of their brilliance almost, is what I kind of hear.
Yeah.
It is. It can be, depending on where they are on the spectrum, you know. And I tell people, you know, everybody is different. That's why it's a spectrum disorder. You know, everybody's not brilliant, you know, in the sense that they're a genius and things like that. There's all these different behaviors and things like that. And so, you know, I really am really careful when people tell people that, you know, they're geniuses.
Oh, yes, I definitely understand from being a certified advocate through the different entities the different levels of autism. I was just saying, based on a person that is high functioning, that's part of their genius. Even if they, you know, were at a lower spectrum, they still may have, you know, another gift. But I definitely understand what you're saying, because a lot of times people assume autism and think of Rain Man and different things like
that.
So I could see that being an issue as well.
Yeah. And so we work really hard to get rid of that we're all like Rain Men, because they're definitely not.
That's true. Everybody is themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, ladies, I want to ask a question because about the stigma that goes around about special needs and disabilities, and how that affected y'all. And today is still like, I know some doctors or, you know, spoke to some people and they say, they are doctors with disability, but they still have still a big stigma around that, you know, people feel that people with disabilities can't achieve different things or can't do these things. They put limitations on them. How y'all feel about that?
How long do we have?
I was thinking
about like, how much time? And so I will give you a short version of the story. So when I went to see my pediatrician about my son and, you know, his behaviors and how he wasn't doing some of the things that, you know, he should be doing on age level, my doctor, you know, they did some testing and things like that, and he told me to my face as a young mom that my son was mentally retarded and that I should institutionalize him and that I'm young enough to have other children, so it's perfectly okay for me to go ahead and basically give him up and start over again. Now, I didn't listen to him at all. You know, I did the work. I raised my son. And at 27 years old, when they told me that he wouldn't be able to do anything or be able to function on his own, can cook, can clean, can do dishes, does his own laundry, puts on his own clothes, he goes grocery shopping, he's a better GPS than my phone. Okay, he has a photographic memory and can tell me where everything is in the grocery store. You know, he's just an awesome individual who can do so much. Yes, he will always need support, but he has done so much more than people thought he would be able to do 20-some years ago. And so I say that to tell you that, you know, you have to do the work. You do. It's work. I spent time with him, you know, teaching him things and all of that, because it's so easy to just give up. And there were days that I wanted to, but I didn't. And so it's because of that stigma that was there that I invested in my son and his well-being and to make him as independent as I possibly could.
Right, I just co-sign all of that, because that sounds right to me. So I co-sign all of that. I definitely think what I think about, and I kind of almost forgot the question, but what I think about, and when people limit individuals with special needs, is from working with my child and hundreds of other children, as well as families and adults with disabilities over the last 15 years or so, I think that I really think that if you work with them and if you really believe that you're able to achieve things with them, you can. But the other thing I think is that what you said earlier, Patricia, we're all individuals. And depending on the person's disability, they may have challenges where they're not going to be able to live without supports. But some people may need a certain level of supports. I know I've been in certain organizations and agencies where, you know, they're college graduates, people that have masters, et cetera. But for me, I had the same, that's why I said I co-signed, I had the same prognosis for my daughter, Zaria. They told me she would never eat, walk, talk, any of that by herself. She did all of that. She ended up modeling for other disability organizations. They told me she wasn't going to be able to do any of that. But if I had believed that, it's like you have to fight for your baby. At the time, it was a few years later, they told me that she was not going to eat, walk, or talk. If I would have just believed that and not hired or went and find my own feeding therapist or speech therapist or occupational therapist and learned the things I need to know for my child, we need to make sure that we understand we are our child's first advocate. And if we're our child's first advocate, we're going to have to do what she said. We're going to have to do the work and the research and learn so that we can help our child be all that they can be. And on the flip end, from working with adults with disabilities in various organizations and agencies, I see what she just said. A lot of parents that decided they wanted, they gave their children up to the system. And so those individuals, some of those adults, aren't able to do anything because nobody has worked with them. But I've also seen great adults that experience different disabilities where their families have worked with them and they're more independent and they do have skills. So we can't put these limitations on them. But in the beginning, as a parent, we need to take some limits off of ourselves, invest in learning and advocating for our child so they can be their best able that they can be.
Absolutely.
I agree totally. I know. I am a mom. I don't have no children with disability. I work with people with disability and special needs for 10 years in a group home. And just wonderful people, my clients, my individuals that I love, and they can do plenty of things for themselves and being independent and having a productive life. And I know for me, my last daughter, I had some complications through her pregnancy, and she's 4 years, she's about to be four, but she's three, and the doctor told me she was going to be Down syndrome, and he said she's having some down to be Down syndrome, and he was like, I advise you to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
mm-hmm.
What? I was like, and this thing is kind of like, we still saying that? Like, I was really surprised. But he did. He was like, if she happens to be Down syndrome after we do all these other tests, I advise you to get an abortion. And I'm just surprised in this time and age, after people have fight and came some way and we have, you know, American Disability Act and all this stuff, that people will still don't accept people with disabilities and special needs. Even when I was working in the field, and in residential areas, they didn't want them there. They was fighting to get them out of there. These people haven't done nothing to them, living their life, minding their own business. And people just, not everybody, but some people are very cruel, and I would think would be a little bit more open-minded. We're in 2017, and I'm glad to see, and y'all can tell me if y'all feel it's correct, but a lot of more openness about it, a lot of more talk about special needs, disability. Still the world, I feel, is not up to date, and because a world is really not built for them, saying that is they still make it very difficult for people with disabilities or special needs to get around those who may be physically challenged. They still don't treat them right. So this day is fact that people with disabilities, special needs, you definitely got to fight. Still not getting the proper treatment like they should.
That's correct. You know, we're still fighting for their civil rights, you know, and even such things as having the right to have a child and raise a family. You know, there was a case a couple years ago where, you know, a married couple had a child and they had some cognitive disabilities, and social services came in and took their child from them. And it was a huge discussion and mess, because who are you to say that they are incapable of raising that child? Who is a person who says, yes, you can, and yes, you cannot? And so we work really, really hard to make sure that they're represented in the best way possible in cases like this, because some of them are able to live independently, have children, raise them without any help from the community whatsoever. And so we just can't put down a blanket statement like, no, you can't have kids. No, you can't get married. You know, we have to be able to allow them to make decisions for themselves. That self-independence is so important with individuals, adults that have disabilities and challenges.
Correct.
I agree, especially if they're to live in a real world with real people and real community and all that great stuff, which we all want and desire. And at the same time, you know, disability is another form of diversity. It's just a difference. It's just a difference.
Exactly.
They are a little bit different in the way we are in some of their abilities, but we are all different in our abilities. We may not be disabled, but we're different in our abilities. And on the other end of that, I think that one of the things we need to realize and remember is, like, what you said earlier, Patricia, was like a lot of women I know that have children that experience Down syndrome, they had to make that choice to have that child. But who gives us the right to decide if someone else procreates or has children? We don't do that for anyone else. That's their choice. And some of them may need those supports in the community, but some may not. And at the other end, that I always remind people when I'm talking, especially to children about relating to other children with disabilities or even adults, we're all born a certain way, whether able or disabled. None of us are perfect. There is no normal. But at any day, at any time, any of us could be affected and become disabled as well. So we need to make sure we remember that. And so sometimes it feels like when we think about some of the supports that people that experience disabilities get or the community living bases and all that stuff, people are thinking about, oh, we have to take care of them and there's a cost or they're different. But that could be any one of us any day. So that's really one of my things that I always remember and I'm grateful for myself or anyone. But, like, I just don't like the feeling of, you know, separating people so much. Or I know, Patricia, you know, being out in the field or I might be at the playground. I've seen people that have a person that experiences disabilities. They're supposed to be assisting and supporting them, and they're on their cell phone talking like that person's not there. Like, I don't like that. Acting like anybody's invisible either. So I have so many concerns, in particular as a parent, but just as a community member for people that experience disabilities and how we treat them.
I agree totally, Teresa. How we treat them as a community is very important, and the stares and the looks, the just blatant disrespect or lack of knowledge of people with disabilities or special needs. And, you know, like you said, any one of us, I can't remember the percentage, can be disabled or have a disability at any given time. And that do happen. And when people do on the other side of things, you realize how challenging it is when you walk in those shoes. And as you said, when I have helped people with disabilities and special needs, I'm like, these are beautiful people, very outspoken, can do plenty of things. Like I said, it's sad that the world is really not set up geared to them. You have to call ahead for certain places to see if they are disabled. You have physical challenges to get around and different things and stuff like that. And then also some doctors don't. Not all doctors see people with disabilities or know how to handle people with disabilities or special needs. So you definitely got to be an advocate. They got to have some wonderful advocates for these people. Do you find it more challenging in the school systems or in the regular world? Do you find most challenges? Because the school system is a little different than, you know, the day-to-day.
Well, my son's 27, and he aged out of the school system, and I did a lot of fighting within the school system, was on all the boards and parent groups I can possibly be in to help raise awareness and to make sure that he was represented and other students like him was represented. I helped, you know, one of the school systems when they was mainstreaming to set up a program so that the you know, children that were in there weren't just staring at the walls because the information that they were teaching they couldn't understand and things like that. But aging out of a public school and into adult services is something that we really need to have more availability, more information on. I don't know where you live, but here in the Washington, D.C. area, there's over 10,000 individuals waiting for services. Waiting, which means they don't have services, which means they're sitting at home, which means all that hard work that you did in school is not being utilized and not being used. And so we're working really hard here to help that number go down so that these individuals can get the help, the services that they need so they can be as independent as possible.
Yeah. Right, and I think that's nationwide, like, of how many people are sitting at home waiting for services, because the other thing that people don't like to talk about is that with disability, sometimes in a lot of cases, statistically, poverty comes hand in hand with it, because they need, mm-hmm. some of them need services, many of them need services that they may not be able to get with private insurance, or maybe they cannot be employed and they need these waivers and such. I'm in the state of Georgia, and I actually am on some of the committees and stuff about several of the waivers, and one of them is the NOW waiver, and it's the same thing. There are families, thousands of families waiting for the NOW mm-hmm. comp waiver, which allows people to be able to do things like experience day programs or rehabilitative services, or live in an assisted community or a group home. And when I say a group home, people kind of get offended. So when you ask, is it harder in the school system or outside the world? I'm a parent. I still have a child that's in school. I had another child, and I have advocated for hundreds and thousands of families doing different things in different areas. But the thing that I noticed that is the same is in school and out of school, just like I said earlier, and both of us have said, you have to do the work. It is not easy. And a lot of people think when kids are in school, you know, it's easier because at least they're getting their services. No, you fight for their services in school.
No.
Right. You fight for your services in school. And what's even worse is if you don't know how to fight, you don't know the regulations and the laws, you better get somebody to teach you or go online and learn or whatever. But then when they age out, like she said her son did, because I have plenty of friends that kids have aged out, then you have to figure out, well, what will they do now? What will provide them the supportive services they need at their level? And is it financed or funded, or how do I find those services? And are there services that help employ them? Because they are, and a lot of people, I was on a train a few months ago, and I looked at this young lady, and she was telling me how she was working at maybe like the Dollar General or something. I said, well, okay, and I asked her, because she said something about her disability, and I said, oh, you have a disability? I said, have you ever heard of Voc Rehab? And she was able to go and set an appointment with this agency that helps individuals with disabilities find jobs. And a lot of people don't even know the resources. So I think it's all about what we both said in the beginning. You have to do the work and due diligence and learn how to advocate, because it's not going to be easy, but it's a little bit better if you, you know, educate and prepare yourself for this long road.
It is. And
I agree with that.
For individuals that, you know, may not have resources, you know, the ones that may be immigrants and don't speak English very well, the ones that may not have high-speed internet in their home, and so they can't sit there all day long and research, or they have to work two or three jobs in order to make ends meet, they don't have the resources. And because these teachers and some of these people who are working in some of these services are overworked and underpaid and tired, that sometimes they only do the bare minimum. And so if you don't know, you won't get.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think, too, like, we expect like special educators and teachers and certain agencies and people to know about all these services that are out there. A lot of times they're so overwhelmed with their paperwork and knowing mm-hmm. their regulations, they don't even know what's available. And I love what you said about just now about maybe if a person is an immigrant or speaks another language, or guess what, is affected by poverty and needs to work and doesn't have time to research, or hardly, you know, they got to pay the bills, they're trying to keep the lights on, they don't have time to do all these things, they don't know about these things. Well, it needs to be more accessible, and that's one of the issues now, you know, that services are so spread out and not accessible, and especially the language barrier. I used to work in a group home, and it was a Spanish family there, and they saw that we took very good care of their son. And one day the father says, Teresita, you know a better place for my child? And he kept asking me, he said, because they act like like we don't know, and da 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 da. And I found him somebody that spoke Spanish, because the agency that I worked for at that time, I would, you know, and I tell people all the time, one of the biggest agencies in America, in Puerto Rico, and all these other north in the coastal Costa Rica, all these places. But it's the worst agency ever, and I couldn't say as an employee at the time, no, this is a horrible agency. But he had hit on something, but nobody was going to tell him. And I was like, well, here goes a number. But his main thing was, he said, nobody will tell us, and nobody, they had a language barrier. So I really agree with that.
Yeah, and it happens way too often, and it's unfortunate. It really is. You know, we need to have this information translated into different languages. You know, fortunately, with technology out there, it's a little easier. But again, if you don't have a smartphone and if you don't have Google Translate, how are you going to have a conversation in a different language? It's very difficult to do so.
Plus, disability rights and the laws and everything else are already their own language in themselves. So first you had to learn, you know all the acronyms and understand what they mean, but then to think about all that in another language, or if it's not culturally acceptable, because we have to remember, too, that in some cultures, when a child has a disability, that may mean a whole different thing, and they relate a whole different way. So that's something else to think about as well.
Exactly.
I'm glad you said that, Teresa, because in some parts of the country, people still don't accept disability, or they don't have no disability people there, or I don't know what they do with them, but China and some is not accepted at all.
In several places of the world, you know, having a disability is unacceptable, and it's some of the things that they do is horrific, and there's agencies that are down there who's trying to stop some of these practices from happening. And I don't even want to get into some of the things that happen to them, but you know, you can do your research. It's not nice and it's not fair.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I totally agree.
Right. We'd do this radio show for 20 hours if we could keep going on.
Right. It's like, let's not go there.
Now, I know, Contessa, you wrote the book about your first book, Mad. Let me get it here.
Mad at the World, How to Move On and Find Peace When You're a Special Needs Parent.
Yeah. So what helped you to make that book? What was on your mind? I know you was writing a journal, and then it turned into a book, something along those lines, correct?
Yeah, I've been journaling. I've been writing, like, you know, all of my life. I'd been journaling about my experiences and things like that, and I had an opportunity to write a book. As a matter of fact, I wrote that book in 3 days, in one weekend, in order for it to be published on time. But I didn't intend to write a book about forgiveness. I was just writing a book about my experiences, and as my story was unfolding, I was telling, you know, my readers in the book that in order to truly find peace, you have to forgive. You can't hold in all of that anger, because I was angry. I was so, so angry. I was angry at my friends. I was angry at my parents. I was angry at the doctors who gave me horrible advice. I was angry at the people at school who didn't want to listen and give my son the benefits and the resources that he needed. You know, I was angry at God at some point and yelling and fussing, like, why would you do this to me? Because I was under the impression that I was being punished, and I had to learn that this wasn't a punishment at all. I hadn't done anything in order for my son to be the way that he was, because understand, I was 16 when I had my son and basically was raising him by myself with very little support. So I was extremely angry at the way my life had turned out, because that was not what I had wanted. And so I had to practice the art of forgiveness. And I know a lot of parents right there, right now, who are angry and at why they're in this situation and what is happening to them, and devastated by their dreams that they had for their child, won't be recognized and going through this grieving process. And so I encourage them to write, to journal, to write down your feelings and to forgive and get that release so you can finally find that joy and be able to experience all the great and wonderful things that you have not, that you weren't able to see in your child because you were so focused on you.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
And that's important because I know that when we just in general go through different things, the first thing sometimes we say is, why me? Why am I going through this and stuff? But this is life. This is where we at. You want to try to take a hold of it and move it on. Don't let it. Don't let the, like you said, forgive and the madness and the anger consume you because it can. And for you know it, you haven't enjoyed life.
Exactly. And it's okay to ask for help. It is okay. I'm going to say this. It is okay to ask for help. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Get all the support that you need in order to help raise your child and take care of your family. Because a lot of parents feel like they have to do this on their own, that this is their task, this is their mantle, this is their cross to bear, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
There are support systems there for a reason. There are resources there for a reason. There are organizations out there for a reason. Reach out and get the help that your family needs.
Most definitely. Ms. Teresa, did you have a comment that you wanted to make?
No, I just love the book. I am still working on my book in regards to disabilities because I'm still working because I decided to collect stories from other mothers that have children with disabilities, and getting those stories have been a task. I truly believe, you know, what she just said in regards to, and I'm sorry, I'm a bit off right before I came on air. I got some news of one of my friend's spouses passing. So what I really feel is what we talk about, what she just said about, like, them writing down their feelings, one, and knowing you didn't do anything wrong. I'm a mother that has birthed 4 children. I have 1 living child now because Zaria's gone. Zaria experienced a seizure and passed away. However, when I had Zaria, she was my 3rd time trying to have a child, and I had 2 children that passed away before then. And so when I had Zaria and I found out she was going to have disabilities, that was a real blow to me because I had lost all these other children. But really what was a blow to me was how people would say, you know, I wish the baby was healthy, or I wish the baby didn't have cerebral palsy, or I'm going to pray for your baby, like they want to pray it away. And what I decided to always remember, that there is nothing made that is imperfect. That child made me who I am today, made me the mother I am to that child, made me who I am here on this phone with you all, and the same for all of you. You two as well, those children and experience working with children and adults with disabilities made us more compassionate, made us turn on that light and help other people. And so I think that, you know, as parents, don't put any of the blame on you. I look at it for myself like it was something that made me a brighter person heart-wise and love-wise and helping-wise, and that, you know, the best thing that the lovely author said, and the mother, that, you know, I can't wait till my children are 27, okay? But
girl, you're so lucky, I tell you.
Right, I'm like 27, okay? But the best thing was support, and I stress this as a parent educator every day for parents that have children with disabilities or not. You have to get a support system. That was the first thing that I started when Zaria was a baby, is I started a group called Special Treasures because I got tired of people saying, y'all have special needs children. You know, God really blessed y'all. Only God gives special people. No, God gave me a treasure. That's a special treasure. And so let's get our little group together. And so I got a group together, in particular a group of mothers of color, because one of the things that I noticed, as we talked about it a minute ago, it also in certain ethnicities I was around, and it was services I didn't know about as a mother of color that my other sisters, Sarah and Beth and Joe, which I love everybody because, you know, I network with everybody. They were like, Teresa, you don't have this. And I was like, no, I don't have that because I'm a middle-class woman and I'm married and I can't get that and blah, blah, blah. And they, yes, you can. So if you get that support, you also get information. So you need that support and information because there were so many things that I thought that I couldn't get for my child or I didn't know was available or out there. And also, you got someone else that understands the life, the walk you're going through that you can vent to. I have friends now that their children may experience autism and behaviors, and mine might experience ADHD. And if there was a meltdown, I can't call my friend that doesn't experience it because they're like, oh, no, I don't. But me and the other friend, we can really get down and talk about some things and understand and support people and each other in a different way because we understand. So I think the support piece and just getting together and getting information is the best thing you can do because nobody knows the walk of someone unless they walk a similar walk.
Absolutely.
I agree. Absolutely. Totally.
So that was great, Teresa, getting your group together, treasures. And
right, and I know those ladies now, and they're like you guys, like the 27-year-old son. There, one of them, her son, he is fully able. He's disabled, but he's fully able because he just got a great scholarship to Roll Tide, whatever, that's in Alabama, playing basketball, doing the wheelchair team. And, I mean, I've seen their children grow. It's another young lady. I remember the little girls taking pictures and doing stuff. And I have another friend. Her son is extremely, we talk about stuff, and I'm looking at him like, wow. So I wish more people get support because I remember we were sitting around, and those ladies were my sheroes because I had just started, you know, with Zaria. She was a baby, but they were the ones telling me, hey, you can do this. Put Zaria on your back. She can't walk and do this. And that helps you build your confidence to be the best mom and advocate you can be.
Absolutely. There is nothing like being able to lean on other people. That's why I tell people, look, I've been doing this autism thing for 27 years. You need to talk? Come and talk to me because I have been there and done it all, I tell you. I've been through the tears, the crying, the throwing stuff, the wishing somebody would come and take him away. To finally getting to a place where I was like, wow, every day is calm. I love this. You're able to do things on your own. I'm watching you grow and all these amazing things. And I've gone through it all. And so I know. And anything that I haven't gone through, I've known people to gone through. You know, the ones that weren't able to take care of their children in their own home and had to put them in group homes because it was the best for their family. And then having to deal with the feelings and the guilt and all of that because everybody looks at you like something's wrong with you. How could you give your child up? You have to do what's best for your family. Always. Always.
I totally agree. I know Teresa touched on that also about some people got a stigma about group homes. And I also have a nephew who has special needs. He has autism. My sister had came to me, you know, asking me about the group homes and stuff like that. And, you know, she gets information about it through the school about different things. And I was like, well, you know, I have to care young adults, teenagers, also older adults with special needs and disability. And you know, I was giving her information, and she looked at me like, I'm not doing that right now. I'm not. You asked me something. I'm just telling you. It's nothing wrong. Like you said, you have to do what's best for your family. It's nothing wrong with finding a good, not all the time, it has to be group homes that do have facilities, like you said, that they can live independent and have some people come and just check on them, depending on what kind of support they may need. Is there some things out there if you just, like you said, you have to definitely get the education and stuff like that. These things are, you know, some of them is great. It's like anything else. You got to check it out, see what works best for you and your family and which one you could get on. But I'm definitely sad to see that we still, people got to be waiting for services and people don't know about different services and don't know how to get services. And I'm hoping we definitely can get better with that, because it's not fair to people to not be able to grow and get the services they need to help them grow and achieve different things. That's
absolutely
just bothersome. Ladies, we have a wonderful conversation, and I'm hoping people who have listened to this and came away with some good pointers and stuff like that. Who want to go first to say a quick wrap-up speech or sentence and tell us where we can find y'all and where, what's going on with y'all, what you got going on?
So right now I'm writing a book, and you had mentioned it during my bio about individuals with higher functioning autism, about dating and relationships and sex and all of that. And so I'm in the process right now of interviewing, you know, individuals with autism, with interviewing caregivers and interviewing parents and interviewing experts to help me, because this isn't a work of fiction. I'm not making this up, but these are actual stories and experiences that I'm putting in this book. And so if you're listening now and you want to, you know, you have something to add or you would love for me to interview you, please let me know. I'm available on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm actually on all social media. You can find me, Contessa Louise. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one, so I'm not really difficult to find. And I would love to sit down and talk to you. The book is going to be released in April for Autism Awareness Month, and, you know, we just have a lot of really great things going on. So, you know, look me up, reach out. I cannot wait to talk to each and every one of you.
Thank you, Contessa.
You're welcome.
Teresa?
Oh, thanks, Contessa. So you could say your name again, because I knew it was a name I couldn't remember. It's like earlier today I was writing an email, and I remembered one of the vendors at my event's name was going to be, it started with a C, and I was like, what is her name? I was like, it took forever. It's Consuela. So I was earlier I was about to call you Consuela. That's why I was like, what she said?
So this is what my friends call me.
Oh, okay. So with Contessa, first of all, Contessa, it's been great being on here with you and learning and talking and hearing the things that you had to say. Patricia, I've gotten to work and meet you before, and I always say, you know, your compassion to help the disabled and the elderly is great. And Contessa, you must have been talking to me, because I'm sure I'm going to reach out to you on social media and talk to you about your book, because I have a passion for helping individuals with disabilities, but I have more of a passion about collaborating and connecting even with people that are like-minded and are on the same path, and, you know, I could always learn something from you. You know, for me, there are a bunch of Teresa Wright Johnsons, and apparently all of them are speakers or trainers or coaches, right? Because they're, oh, I'm just finding it, or advocates. So
it
you
must,
can find me.
It must be in your blood.
I know one lady reached
blood,
out, and she's. Yeah, she's even in Georgia, this one lady, Teresa Wright Johnson, and she said, emailed me, she said, well, we might want to let people know how can we say we're two different people, because we're in the same circle, I see. And I was like, listen, I'm not changing my name. This is my name. But I can be probably the best place to reach me or find me is just looking up TWJME. That's T as in Tom, W as in Wright, J as in Johnson, and then M as a man, and E, like Teresa Wright Johnson, me, just Googling TWJME. Or you can just, you know, look up Teresa Wright Johnson. If you click on it and you see a bunch of stuff about advocacy and that kind of thing, great. My website is the same, twjme.com, and all on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything is TWJME. And I'm excited. I'm actually going to talk to Contessa, because I was about to call you Consuela, but I'm going to talk to Contessa about more about her book and so forth, because my daughter Zaria would have been 16 this upcoming year in 2018, and we're actually doing a Z and For the Love of Z on the Sea, a special needs cruise in June. And we're going to have speakers and all sorts of stuff, but I'm always looking to connect and learn more. And plus, I'm always in DMC, because I'm a girl from Baltimore, Maryland, and I have a book coming out called Be More Girl to the peach. Be More Girl to the Peach, and I talk about disability and mental health in that book. So I look forward to that coming out in January, and I just want you guys to reach out to me and for me to get to know more of you out there, because I know there are great moms out there, single moms, moms with children with disabilities, just moms, because I believe that motherhood is like being a multi-operational manager. You never know what you have to handle in budget and balance.
I love it. Teresa makes sure she says it all that. I don't even know how she do all the things she do, but she make it look good and easy.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies, I had a pleasure doing this show with y'all, Contessa, Teresa, y'all wonderful people. I want to thank you and all our listeners and sponsors. I want to thank you also for coming on the show and sharing the things y'all do and being advocates, speakers, and authors, both of y'all, and all the great things y'all doing and growing and helping other people in the community, and definitely just letting people know about special needs and what resources they can get and different things. And like you said, it's all about collaborating and helping one another. We all need to share and enlighten those who may not know. And, you know, treat everybody as individuals, everybody their own person. And there's nothing wrong with that. So as we bounce in, and we want to thank all our listeners and network family for connecting. As you know, we are Sage Mentoring, so you can follow us at Sage Mentoring on Facebook, Instagram, and give us a lot of hearts and likes and tell us how you like the show. Until next week, stay, avoid the drama, and raise those babies. Bye, ladies. Everybody have a great night.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
It's a journey, sacrifice, but I wouldn't trade it in for my life. It feels like the world's on my